Hey everybody, and welcome back to this episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I am super delighted to have Joanna Rawbone as my guest. She did a TEDx talk on extroversion bias in the workplace. We had a great conversation about what it means to be an extrovert, what it means to be an introvert, and how we operate in the world. So I'm super curious, are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? I found out about 10 years ago that I'm an introvert. And once I found out that component of myself, I fully understood how I needed to operate in the world. And my life became so much easier. It's all about creating self-awareness for many aspects of your life. I would love to hear, introvert or extrovert. You can email me, shelly@shellydryman.com. I'm going to drop that down in the show notes below. Also, I will drop Joanna's TEDx talk down there. And also, I'm going to invite you to join our Facebook group, Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned, 6,500 Women Strong. That link, you guessed it, folks, is also down in the show notes. Okay, on to my episode with Joanna. What got you interested in this topic of introverts and extroverts, and more specifically, the bias that you're finding in the workplace? What got you started on that?
The truth is, Shelley, I finally got mad enough. So I've been a trainer, coach, facilitator since 1987, and I've run my own business since 1994, and that business has taken me, you know, around the world working with all sorts of different corporate clients. And there was one thing that I kept seeing again and again and again, and it was the quieter people, both men and women, being overlooked, being passed over for promotions, being spoken over. And I watched them drain, watch their mental energy drain as we were in meetings, as I was running training courses with them. And I knew I had to do something. And I reached, just coming up to 60, a few years ago now. And I thought, I got to that point where I thought, if not now, when? If not me, who? Yeah. So I thought, this is me, this is my purpose, and this is what I'm here to do. So until I turn up my toes, Shelley, I will be doing this work to shift the extroversion bias and enable introverts to flourish without pretending to be something they're not.
Well, I, as an introvert, appreciate you going on this mission. And I'm going to, you know, post your, I actually posted your TED talk in the group today, and I'll post it in the show notes in this, but I really loved what you said in particular about the introductions going around the meeting. What'd you call it?
The creeping death of introductions.
I love that. But before we talk about that, people always have a big misconceptions about what introverts and extroverts, you know, how we operate. So let's clear that up. What's the difference between the two, and why is it important to know that?
Yeah, perfect. And I do think that's an important place to start. I go right back to Jungian definition. I'm a Jungian, so I go back to Jung's definition here. And what he talked about was the fact that introverts are inward focused, and they get their energy from turning inwards. So typically, when we now know that they're overstimulated mentally, so being in an environment where there's yet more stimulation just drains their mental batteries. So they need to retreat in order to recharge their batteries. And as you saw in my TEDx talk, you know, I think about introverts almost plugging themselves in quietly into the corner of the room to recharge. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that as introverts, we really need to pay attention to, because if we don't recharge sufficiently, then what happens is we go on a journey from overwhelmed to hangover to introvert burnout, which is a miserable place to be. Now, that's in contrast to that, an extravert, and Jung talked about extravert, not extrovert, meaning outward focused. Extroverts get their energy from social interaction, from active experiences, from change. So the very thing that charges their battery is what tends to drain our batteries. And that's where some of the misunderstandings, the tension arises, because a lot of extroverts don't understand why we're quiet. So we'll often get asked, you know, are you okay? Mm-hmm. You know, you're really quiet today. Yep, because I'm trying to hang on to my last bit of mental battery in order to do great work or whatever it happens to be. And a lot of introverts seem to understand what makes extrovert tick, but then make them the bad guys. Like, you know, they're wrong, they're bad for doing it. But actually, both sides here, I believe, need to understand what makes the other tick so that we can appreciate and value the difference, not let it kind of, you know, be something that divides us. Let's talk about real inclusivity here.
I have seen that sort of division going on. It's like, oh, and I agree. I think that it's unnecessary for one thing. We do have to know how we operate so that we can operate with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a member of a few introvert groups where there's just a lot of moaning. Can you believe it? You know, what the hell, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, whenever I suggest, and I do quite often, whenever I suggest, well, maybe help them understand, no, that's not my job to do that. And, it, you know, I take a different stance on this, in that if I want to not moan about things, then I have a responsibility to help educate and inform. They may or may not take it from me, but at least I've done my piece.
Right. No, I think that's important. We were talking earlier before the episode started, is that I found out I'm an introvert. And one of the things that people will say to me is, oh, but you're not shy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so you don't. They, and I'm like, well, no, I'm not shy. And, you know, what's that got to do with anything?
It's one of the misconceptions about introversion. And unfortunately, so many things get wrapped up into that kind of label. So introversion is not about shyness. You know, we are wired differently. We're wired differently. And shyness is a learnt behavior that can also be unlearned, whereas we can't change the way we're wired. You know, we need to understand that. Introversion is also not the same as social anxiety. You know, yeah. That is something, it's again different. It's not the same as depression. And, you know, introverts are not lonely. We just love being alone. I don't think I have ever been lonely in my life. No, that's not true. Actually, I have. I'm loneliest when I'm with a bunch of drains, people who don't understand, who just talk at me and over me and don't make any attempt to understand. That's when I feel lonely. So it's not being on my own where I feel lonely. It's being in a crowd of people who really don't understand.
Yeah, I like what you said about, because I was super shy for a long, long, long time. And people always find that incredibly hard to believe. But I was like, you'd say boo to me and I would go hide in the corner and cry for days. So, you know, so it's definitely not about being shy. Yeah. So I've been in situations where with a lot of talkers, you know, I've got a lot of extroverted friends and I love them. They're great. And I admire their ability to have ongoing energy, but they do tend to talk at me. And it's so true. I find, you know, like you, is that I'll have like introvert hangover. And it was a term I learned, you know, a couple of years ago, because my partner, Steve, back before COVID, we did a lot of things like on the weekends. We went to a lot of concerts, a lot of music, a lot of things like that. And I remember saying on Sunday, it's like, oh, I've got an introvert hangover. I need the next week to not do anything. So I want to talk a little bit about recognizing that in yourself and how important it is, because back before I knew what was wrong with me, I was super flaky. Like I didn't understand that I needed to re-energized. So I would make plans, or I think this was a good idea, or I would do something because someone wanted me to. And I just felt so flaky all the time because I was constantly canceling on people or ghosting people because I didn't understand why I just could not do it.
Yeah.
But now that I know, like you were talking about, what it means to be an introvert and how we energize ourselves, life is so much easier for me now.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I find is I too have lots of extroverted friends, and they understand me and they know what makes me tick. So when I check out mentally or when I check out physically, they don't have a go at me. They don't say, oh, you yeah. disappeared again. It's like, okay, Jo's just having her 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love to make plans with people like that. I've got some plans coming up soon. So what I now do is I schedule time in to make sure I'm kind of supercharged
right.
before whatever it is, so that I don't bail out. Because again, I have bailed out in the past, and I am still one of those people where if a client cancels, I kind of go, yes, because there's always something I can do with my time. I can always recharge with that time. I may have got myself to that point of being ready for them, but I never complain when somebody cancels on me. It's always a bit of a joy. So I pre-charge and then I make sure I recharge afterwards. So if I've got an event on a Saturday, Friday and possibly some of Thursday is nothing booked in. Sunday and probably some of Monday, nothing booked in, so that I never get to that point of going from overwhelmed to hangover. And because I've been in introvert burnout once, I'm definitely not going back there again.
You've seen those memes on Facebook where, you know, in introvert pages and stuff, where they'll be like, the best thing for a Friday night is when someone calls and says they can't, you know, they're canceling plans. You're like, woohoo! You know, they've got a exactly. book and a cover and their cat and all that stuff. You know, that's sort of like I feel. It's not that we don't like doing things, but like you said, I like how you said that, is that we can always, you know, we use that time to recharge and do what we want to do. I kind of like to switch gears now and really go into your TED talk about the bias in the workplace. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of things that I've seen in my, you know, 27 years of my professional career. One of the things I've noticed about myself in meetings and stuff, and this could be part of what you talked about earlier, where people just talk over you or they, you know, don't think you have any input. So I'm a slow processor, very slow processor. And I don't know if that's, you know, I don't want to say a symptom, a condition of being an introvert, but like you'll ask me a question and I can't rattle out something necessarily unless I know off the top of my head. Like I have a media interview at 2:00 today and I've been preparing for hours
for yeah. a
2-minute interview, you know? So I don't know if that's, but I found that in my workplace, you know, I'm expected to, and I'm like, give me a day. I'll get back with you with a thoughtful answer. Don't ask me just to spew some crap in the air. That's not going to make any sense. So,
and that's exactly what I encourage my clients to do, is to really own their introversion and play to their strengths. So when it comes to, you know, typical workplace practices, the extroversion bias is that we'll call meetings, impromptu meetings with no clear agenda, throw questions at people and get them to kind of, you know, expect some kind of response. So I now take time with my clients to A, explain I'm an introvert and what that means. And I also explain my communication process, because one of the things we've noticed is that introverts and extroverts have a different communication process. And you're right, it's down to the processing. So introverts tend to have a think, say, think communication process. So exactly as you've described, when asked a question, what we'll generally do is kind of get in touch both cognitively, but also sometimes kind of physically, emotionally with our sense of knowing, so that when we answer, we're giving a true answer. An answer that's considered, an answer that is to the best of our knowledge and ability, what we actually want to say. And you may remember the story from my TEDx talk where a trainer in a training course asked me a question. I didn't answer immediately because I went and did my think about the response. And he moved on to somebody else, never came back to me for the answer. And then at the end gave me feedback that I lacked confidence and I needed to speak up more. No, actually you as a trainer, especially you as a trainer, you need to understand the different communication processes. Whereas the extrovert has a say, think, say process. So you ask them a question, they'll it's like a stream of consciousness. They'll give you an answer. And sometimes you'll see they're surprising themselves as they're answering, almost like, oh, I didn't know I was going to say that, or I didn't know that's what I thought. And in fact, one of my extremely extroverted colleagues, the number of times he says that into, you know, oh, I didn't know I was thinking that. So they make sense of it as they go. Then they might think about it a bit and then they'll say, okay, let me just correct that. So we have very opposite processes. In corporate life, a lot of times people would understand that and that would be okay. But in some client meetings, for instance, if it was a new client, they wouldn't necessarily get that. So I learned how to use what I call placeholders. So if I was asked a question, I would say something like, that's a really interesting question. And as I'm sitting here thinking about it now, I notice that actually I can see different perspectives. I can see different ways around that. So if I connect with the one that is kind of most present for me, all that time, all those words are just my brain going, what is it you really want to say? But what I've done is I've claimed my place in that conversation so that I'm not going to get excluded in some way. And I found that technique to be really powerful.
I also know that what you're talking about here with the think, or say, think, say, depending on, you know, your inclination, is that in personal relationships too. I know we're switching gears a little bit, but I just thought of this because a lot of the women in my group have lots of personal questions and things that they post about relationships and things like that. My second husband was my second and final husband was an emotionally abusive man and very extroverted. So he would just like come at me, you know, like we would be talking and then I would be expected to come up with an answer and I would just like say something like, but then I'm thinking to myself, that's not really what I wanted to say because I'm sort of this slow processing person. And then that would be held against me later. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know, it's not in the business world, but I think it, you know, speaks to what we as, you know, people who are introverted, especially if you're in relationships, need to also think about that as well as the workplace, you know, figuring out a way that you can just step back and do a placeholder or something, or say, I'll get back with you in 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny enough, I've just the last podcast episode I recorded was I've been asked to be a coach for a dating site, bringing my expertise of how to show up fully and authentically as an introvert. And I recorded a podcast about starting as you mean to go on, because for me, one of the things I've noticed is that, and when I was much younger, certainly I did this, which, you know, you'd hear about if you listened to my episode, which is that I bent myself so out of shape in order to be what I thought somebody else wanted. And it's only as I've grown older that, you know, and what am I in my sixth, you know, almost mid 60s now, it's taken me that long to get confident enough to be able to say, this is me. And yes, I'll compromise, but I won't bend myself out of shape, because compromise is both sides giving. You know, I'm not going to do all of the compromising here. So for me, starting as I mean to go on means that what I do is I'm very open about who I am, what my needs are. And I think some of the most powerful work I've done with women, especially 50s and above, because I had a bunch of clients who reached that point, and I was in a similar place as well, where they were either empty nesters or their children were boomerang kids and wouldn't leave home. Mm-hmm. They had either lost their parents and were adult orphans, or they were now caring, you know, for ailing parents. And they would often wake up one morning, kind of roll over in bed and think, and what am I doing with you after all these years? And one of the things I realized is how important it is for women of that age with that wisdom to finally get clear about and say, these are my needs. And in a beginning of a new relationship, being prepared to say, actually, these are my needs. I'd love to hear what your needs are and how might they fit together. So one of my most important, you know, and we all have the basic need of water and nutrition and sleep and all those sorts of things. One of my needs is I have about 2 hours a day where I am on my own. Mm-hmm. And if my husband and I happen to be in the same environment, we have what we lovingly refer to as companionable silence. We don't need to talk. We don't make small talk about the day. If we want to talk about the day, we will, but there's no pressure to do that. So one of my needs is 2 hours a day. Now, if in the beginning of a new relationship, or even if I'm now getting honest with my existing relationship, my partner needs at least 2 hours of kind of interaction and fun and social stuff, then I'm going to say, fab, go do that with somebody else, because that's not what you're going to do with me in my 2 hours. So you go be social in whatever way you want to be social, leaving me to be quiet in my 2 hours. Then what we can do is come together to meet, you know, or to satisfy some of our other needs. But don't feel that I have to be that person because they need that kind of social stimulation.
Yeah, I love that. So that's how Steve and I are. He's always saying relationship is easy because we don't feel the need to go on and on. But of course, he's 70. I think he's going to be 73, and I just turned 59. So he's really at that stage in his life where I think he's really always sort of known, you know, what he's wanting to do. But I got lots of questions for you, so I'm going to try not to get too rambly here or, you know, discombobulated. But going back to, you know, what you said about figuring out who you are and your needs and stuff. It's so strange. I think about probably, I turned 59 on the 7th of this month. And it was just a few days before that. All of a sudden, I just got as mad as hell. And I'm just like, I'm just not going to take this anymore. I don't know what came over me. I always felt like in the past 10 years, I've been able to, now that I understand how I function, you know, especially being an introvert, which is, I think, is a huge part of my life. It's a huge part of who I am and how I operate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's what you talked about earlier. I coined it as, you know, I'm no longer going to lower my voice. So I think that speaks to what you lower my voice, not, you know, like in volume, but in what I want to say. And I think that's like bending to people's needs. So let's look at that in terms of business and employers, because I know a lot of women in the group ask questions all the time about new employment and businesses and things like that. That's a relationship. Could you just go and say, hey, listen, I know that I would like this job and you've just hired me, you're thinking about hiring me, but here are my needs. You know, I don't like meetings. I don't like impromptu meetings. I don't, you know, I don't talk a lot. I'm a slow processor. You know, how can we approach that in new business work relationships?
Yeah, great question. And I think the first thing for me is kind of how I show up in the interview. And sadly, there are so many kind of recruitment coaches who coach you to be extroverted for the interview. And then if you get the job, you show up at work and people go, who's that? That's not who we have recruited. So for me, it's about being honest from the outset, but it's about having a positive frame and language that really spells out who we are in positive sense. So a lot of the things you said were almost like, I'm not this, I'm not that, and almost apologetic. So one of the things that I really help people to do is to find how to articulate that in a way that sounds so appealing that the new boss or the colleagues would go, why wouldn't I want some of that? Yeah. So one of the things I do is talk about the fact that, you know, one of the roles you'll find me taking in meetings is that I may appear to be the silent observer a lot of the time. And that's because as an introvert, one of my top skills is listening, and I listen with my eyes as well as my ears. So I will notice when somebody isn't quite so comfortable, mm-hmm. or when somebody is shaking their head when everyone else appears to be agreeing, which then gives me the ability to either assimilate ideas or to bring people in or to raise awareness of things that other people haven't noticed.
Right.
So I won't be a big contributor, but what I do say will really add value in your meetings. And you know, so that kind of reframing, then people would go, oh, that's brilliant. And I've now absolutely set the scene so that they're not looking at me going, why haven't we heard from you, Joe? Because actually people know that's how I'm going to operate. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things we know is that introverts are unlikely to contribute, especially if it's already been said, like why waste airtime if somebody's already said it?
I hate that. I'm like, that's been said a gazillion times. Move on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I suppose one of the downsides is that because we contribute when we believe we have something of value to add, we are then prejudging whether it's going to add value or not. So I also encourage people to hold that lightly. So if I'm not sure if it's going to add value, but there's a sense in me that says I probably ought to be saying this, I will have a bit of a pre-frame before it that, you know, along the lines of, I don't know if this is going to make sense to people, but one of the things I've noticed is, or I have a concern about this. Does anybody else have that concern?
Yeah.
So what I'm always doing is I'm not saying I'm concerned about this and have people kind of round on me. I'm holding it lightly and I'm holding it with curiosity. So if people say, no, we're fine, it's like, okay, do you want to know what my concern is about? Would that be helpful? So I think some of my training and facilitation skills come to the fore here, but all of these are learnable skills, learnable ways of being. And it stops us being defensive. And you know, we talk in the sales process sometimes about anticipating what the objections are and handling them up front, because then you're being proactive rather than getting defensive. So even as part of an introduction with a brand new group of people in a meeting, I may say, Hi, I'm Joe, I'm an introvert. Oh, hang on a minute, is that the wrong meeting? Not sure yet. Make a bit of a joke about it. But actually, I am an introvert. And what that means is that, you know, I won't contribute a lot. So I will position it so that people know. And sometimes, you know, the number of people around the table who kind of nod and almost relax as if they too are introverts, because let's face it, up to 50% of any population identifies as an introvert. So that's an awful lot of people pretending to be something they're not. And I think I give people permission to stop pretending and just go, yeah, me too, Joe, me too.
Yeah. I think that really speaks to what I was going to ask you next about why is it important that we know this? I guess some people would be like, ah, who cares? You know, it's just this thing. But that's one of the reasons is that I've always preached on the topic of finding the like-minded people. I mean, we do need to also hang out with people that aren't like us, but when you get in a group that is going through the same thing that you are, then you do have support and you have the ability to go after and say, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I too have felt that way. I've not been able to feel like I could speak up. So thank you for doing that on behalf of all of us in the meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's a key part of, you know, the diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda. Most organizations now are hot on that, but very few of them take into account this aspect of neurodiversity. I believe I'm adding to that narrative by actually being able to say that, you know, this is an aspect of neurodiversity. And if you haven't considered that before, how are you making sure that your practices and processes are inclusive of this particular aspect of neurodiversity?
So how are you finding that going over with the people you talk to, the people that have the ability to make those changes?
mostly really well. I have some uphill battles, and I won't deny that. And I foresee that anyway. I anticipate that, because, you know, the extroversion bias is so endemic and embedded from early childhood onwards. You know, it's rife in education, where we worry about, you know, little Jane, because during breaks, you know, during between classes, she wants to sit quietly and read rather than run around the playground screaming. Exactly, me too. Yeah. And then we kind of get into this thing about, oh, they're not, she's not socialized, so we need to make sure she's properly socialized. And then we kind of, as parents, we start to worry, and then we say, oh, you know, Jane, make sure that you, you know, do you want to have some friends for a sleepover? And, you know, we're pushing introverted children. So by the time they're 9, 10, 11, early teenagers, they already think they're not enough as they are, because they're constantly getting this message, be different, be somebody else, be who you're not. So it's so important that what we actually do is really start to address that early on and recognize the difference, value the difference, and help both introverts and extroverts see that this is a way we're different. Neither is wrong or right. We're just different.
You know, as you were talking, I just flashed back through my entire childhood, because I was that shy kid. I mean, I was shy. You know, I really was shy, not just introverted, yeah, fake shy, as people think. But I really was shy. But, you know, when you talk about how we're pushed into this world of, you know, be loud, be proud, be out there, you know, speak up, don't be shy, don't do this, don't do that. And then as women, all that other stuff is piled on us. Like, you should get married, you should have kids, you should act this way, you should be a good girl, don't talk like that, don't wear that. So it's just this extra layer of stuff, of, you know, excuse my language, shit, that no wonder we're so angry by the time we hit 50.
By the time we hit menopause, that's it. That's the straw that breaks the camel's
back. I know, exactly. It's like, then you're menopause and you got this inferno inside you, and you're like, screw you all.
Absolutely.
Done with all of you. But it's just an extra layer that, and you know, it happens, and not just to introverts, but to all sorts of kids and, you know, things. And we're just, yeah, like bombarded. And then, you know, women in the group, they'll post something, and they're just so confused. They are so confused. They're lost. They're confused. We had a woman this morning post about how she doesn't have, like, she just has no passion and ambition. And I think she does. She just doesn't know. And we get a lot of this. I, you know, who in the hell am I? We don't even, yeah, know where to start.
And I think that's something that I certainly experienced as I got older and as I grew into myself almost. So in my early kind of formative and 20s and 30s, even a little bit of my 40s, I was being who society kind of expected me to be. I was conforming. And it wasn't until, I mean, I didn't find out I was an introvert until my 30s. And even then, I didn't know how to make the best of it. I then knew the difference between what, you know, I knew what made me different, and I knew what an extrovert looked and sounded like. So then I pretended to be more extroverted for another, mm-hmm, decade almost. So it wasn't until I finally, and it was, I guess, perimenopausal for me, where I finally thought, this is madness. You know, I'd already started to lose relatives. I'd started to lose friends. And it's often a big situation like that that gets us to reassess, doesn't it? To reappraise our life.
Yeah.
And it certainly got me when I started losing colleagues younger than me with health problems. And I thought, you know, if I've only got one stab at this life, and of course we all have different views about that, then am I really making the best of it? Am I really going to get to that point where I get to the end of my life and say, wow, what a ride. I remember having a poster on my wall for a while that said, you know, life is not about turning up at the end neatly turned out with kind of, you know, clean clothes. It's about screeching in, you know, sideways saying, wow, what a ride.
And yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And I realized that's how I want to live my life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been many years since I've been a good girl, that's for sure. I've always been quite rebellious and prepared to make a noise. So, you know, not as Marianne Williamson said, you know, I spent a few years playing small, not anymore. And I think for people who are lost, especially when they come into our age group, for me, it was about redefining. So what do I want my life to be like? Mm-hmm. Do I want that person I've spent 20, 30 years with? You know, just because I've started doesn't mean I have to finish, doesn't mean I have to see out my life with them. There are some tough decisions to be made. And, you know, that's where I love Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, mm-hmm. for that exact reason. Beautiful work. I really love it. But I think it's about, you know, really starting to say, what do I want to achieve? If I was writing my own epitaph, what do I want it to say?
Yeah.
So that, you know, so that I leave, and in my case, it's about leaving a legacy. It's doing some work that leaves a legacy that makes other people's lives, you know, better in some way.
Oh, it's such great words. Oh my gosh. What a lovely conversation with you. I'm so glad that we've connected. Just, oh my gosh, so much goodness out of this. Let's see if I have any other questions for you. I don't think I do. Do you have something else that you wanted to add before we end the conversation? Any parting words of wisdom?
I guess the parting word of wisdom is if anyone's relating to this in that they're an introvert, then really kind of start to identify your strengths, own them, claim them, play to them consistently, and stop pretending. And if you're not an introvert, you will have them in your life somewhere. Be curious about the difference and value the difference, because we only flourish. We can only kind of live that and pursue that life, that authentic life, if actually we know it ourselves and we're allowed to do that by other people. So be curious and just own the introversion, own it proudly.